This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour two rolling along this morning. Good morning. It is your Tuesday. If you missed hour one, we've been talking about a big day today for the NFL. Franchise tag day is open now. Teams can start figuring out what they want to do with the franchise tag. Doesn't mean you'll see a bunch of them today, but it just means the opportunity to do that now is open for any time that you want to do that. The New York Giants have a situation with Daniel Jones. They want to sign him. They want to keep him. We saw Daniel Jones do things that we hadn't seen in his career under Brian Daboll, so there's excitement brewing. I think that if you're a Giants fan, you've got to be happy with that, with this season. It was unexpected. It was a playoff run. And not only was it a playoff run, but you saw your quarterback, who was drafted in 2019, struggle with different coordinators, different coaches, just sort of a mess of an organization. And the development of Daniel Jones was stalled because of it. But you saw him take a huge leap forward, almost, Ron, a giant leap forward. I get it. All right. I know. Stupid pun. But nevertheless, I tried. But you saw Daniel Jones.
That one was good, but not as good as does New York need a car?
Yes, New York. Yeah, what do you do? Yeah, should be excited about a shiny car. I'm trying this morning. I'm trying to get a little bit more snappy. You saw him take a leap. You saw him play one of the best games of his career in the playoffs against the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, it was excellent. So much so that even though they got bombed out by Philadelphia, you can almost go, I'll take it. Right? I'll take it. A team that hadn't been in the playoffs in a while, been kind of hovering around terribleness, and now I'm seeing my quarterback develop to a player that won on the road in the postseason against one of the better records in the NFL in terms of the Minnesota Vikings. Notice I didn't say better teams in the NFL. But that was a big step. So now you've got a situation where you're trying to work out a deal, and you are now saying, you know what? All of this has paid off. All of the struggles of Daniel Jones is paying off, and now he... Remember what Howard Cross told us a while back when we talked about this? He said, you know, can the Giants afford him? I said, did Daniel Jones earn himself that big contract? He goes, yes and no. Yes, he's earned it, but no, the Giants may not be able to afford it. So Daniel Jones has responded to the loyalty of the Giants by getting a new agent. Now, I have zero idea what this means. I'm trying to figure out why Daniel Jones, like, what is his angle? What is he trying to do? Is he realizing now that he's in a situation where he may need a pit bull in these conversations? Because that's why you get an agent. You get an agent to understand the legalism of the contract. But you also, one of the reasons you get an agent is you let them do your dirty work, right? You let them be the pit bull in the pen. They're the ones that are going to say things that you don't want to say because you want to have a relationship with the organization. So your agent is the one that says, my client, blah, blah, blah. And if it wasn't for my client, but that's what you don't want to say those things, but you want somebody to say those things. And you want somebody who's going to be like 2 o'clock in the morning going, all right, I'm still awake. What do we got? And that's what you're looking for. Now, Daniel Jones didn't get an agent. Daniel Jones got a new agent. Now, does that mean that he looked at his agency that he was with and said, yeah, you're fine when I'm a rookie contract guy, but now that I'm in real negotiations, I don't think that you guys are capable of getting me max dollars for what the New York Giants are going to want to give me?
It's kind of sad to say, you know, did they even get an opportunity to try?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my only problem with this is that this stigma around Daniel Jones has been so thick the last couple of years.
It has been. You're right.
That this year, even for us, was like, wow.
It
really
was. He
actually can't play football.
It really was eye-opening.
And then the first thing he does is go, no, you guys can't cut it.
See, I'm wondering, like, was his agency just
or
actually, like...
Or should I say, you guys can't hack it?
Yeah,
but that's the wrong team.
But that's all right. You're trying. Now, was he looking at his current, like the old agency as the one that's like, hey, Daniel, we just got you a car dealership ad.
Right.
Hi, I'm Daniel Jones. Visit Bob Simmons Chevrolet in the greater tri-state area. Is that the only thing he was doing? But then when it came to the real money, like he was giving it to somebody else.
What was that line in Jerry Maguire?
Jerry Maguire.
When she was sitting there going, shoes, soda,
Yeah,
car.
Right. That's right. Yeah, well, she was pointing that all out.
The big four.
Yeah, the big four. Right. Right. That's what Daniel Jones was using his old agency for. Now he's up for the big nine-figure contract. He's like, yeah, I just don't think you guys are capable of being the animal aggressor. Right? Was it Bob Sugar now stepping in?
Exactly. You know, your agent, he lost it. He lost it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My word is as strong as oak. Poor Daniel Jones. It's not show friends, it's show business. Now he's going to really hit it to the Giants. So what do the Giants do? They got two players that they're trying to work out deals with, Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones. Who do they franchise tag? Like, which one do they say, all right, you get this until we talk to you later. Go away.
And is Saquon Barkley that special of a running back that you're turned away from, oh, we can find one in this draft?
Yeah, right. That's another problem.
I mean, because, you know, the stigma on running backs is terrible right now.
So, you know what, man? I've never seen a position fall off the map so fast than running backs in the last decade and a half, maybe even decade. You know, it used to be there was this old, you know, you were a running back in this league. You were one of the most important people in the NFL. Mm-hmm. When I grew up, it was the most important. Like, it was quarterback and running back were right there because the best teams had the best running backs, right? You were talking about, you know, whether it was Dorsett, whether it was Walter Payton. I mean, you were talking about the teams that mattered the most had a strong running game.
Like, you go back, like, in the, you know, the 80s, the Super Bowl winning teams, or even both teams that made it to the Super Bowl in the 80s and 90s. You can name the running backs of all the teams.
Exactly.
I look at these most recent Super Bowls. I couldn't even tell you who the running backs were this year.
It's amazing that you could be a kid growing up with speed to be a running back, and you may start thinking that maybe I should be a D-back. Right, or maybe I should find another position I should train at if I want to get to the next level. Because running backs are a dime a dozen, and they never – it's almost like you cringe when your team signs a running back to a huge deal.
Yep.
You kind of go, ugh, I don't know, man.
And you know who I blame for this? I can partially blame the Patriots, Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Yeah, I would go down that road.
During Brady's tenure, who was his main running back? It was always a committee.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I say, like, you know, I'm literally thinking about this year. I couldn't tell you who the Chiefs running back was in the Super Bowl. Couldn't tell you who the Eagles running back was.
It was a rookie. I mean, it was Isaiah Pacheco, right? I mean,
he wasn't their main running back all season long.
Eagles.
That's how much it's dead.
Even the Eagles, Miles Sanders, there was a running team. It was Miles Sanders and Boston Scott.
Is it Boston Scott?
Yeah, I think so.
But Jalen Hurts outgained them all.
But it was Jalen Hurts, right? But that was the thing. It was the two running backs, but it was Jalen Hurts. That was the key. Chicago is the same way. It's Justin Fields, right? So David Montgomery got hurt, but nevertheless, it's Justin Fields. The running back position, so if you're the Giants, you might just go, let's just deal with that later. Let's get Daniel Jones worked out. Yeah. Make sure we lock him in. He's the guy.
Because
Saquon Barkley is important, but let's not go crazy.
You know, because they're sitting there going, it's like, what is it that Tony and Ron always say? There's only 32 of these guys in the world, and really only 20 of them are really good.
That's right. So and if you got one, you get one.
They might have a top 20 quarterback now.
Yeah.
And so you got to lock him in. Saquon Barkley, I mean, he was terrible last year coming back from injury, good this year. But who's to say you can't, you know, Bijan Robinson out of Texas isn't.
We haven't had a real sort of body of work under the Brian Daboll system outside of him being coordinator in Buffalo, but I mean as a head coach to say that Saquon Barkley is an integral part of what they're doing, right? I mean, like you need if you have a couple of years where you go, oh, he plugs in this guy, but you're the quarterback position. I mean, it's so difficult to make a ton of money as a running back in the NFL when offenses can gear around other players or they can go around the position in and of itself. Like, they don't have to be a top running team. And the quarterback is in a great position because there's about 20 of them that are really good and worth your time and effort. And if you're one of them, you sit back and you enjoy the fruits of your exclusivity. Right? I mean, to be – like, there's only one Tom Cruise, right? Like, that's why he makes – $30 million a picture plus rights and all that other stuff, right? Because there's only certain actors that can go on screen and instantly sell tickets, right? That's how it works in Hollywood. They know there's a list of actors that they know if they put the if that actor is in this movie, it's guaranteed at least this level, right? We've done the surveys, we've done the metrics. These actors are worth this amount in the box office, and if word gets out that the movie's good, it's worth extra this, and this, and this. I mean, my God, I saw another Fast and the Furious ad at the Super Bowl, right? I mean, if I was the production company, I would do those all day, every day. I would just.
And why they keep saying this is the last one? Why, stop.
Right, stop. Just keep doing it. It keeps making you money.
Yep.
Why? Because you have a very, very exclusive property that continues to make money. If you're a quarterback and you are in a position to do that, that's great. But if you're turning out films where any actor could be in it and you're still making money, that's different, right? Like Star Wars. They didn't need Daisy Ridley to be. They could have found any actress to play Rey. They didn't need John Bagoya. They didn't need Isaac. What's his name? Oscar Isaacs. They didn't need those people.
No, but when they found them,
right? When they found them, they're great.
That's what Star Wars has always done too. They find these unknowns that you've never heard of before. You know, with the exception of Ewan McGregor.
Right.
You know, Liam Neeson was in that first one. Samuel Jackson had small roles, but there's no big name stars in these movies.
Exactly. The franchise sells itself.
Yeah.
Same thing with being a running back. You're a running back. It's like being on a good team, a running back on a good team. You may make a difference, but believe me, they can find somebody else to do your production. They can find a committee to do your production. But if you're an elite quarterback, you're the Tom Cruise of the industry, meaning you're gonna be worth X amount every time you get on screen. All right, coming up, good, the bad, and the dumb. Ron takes us through that on your Tuesday. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's time for the good, the bad, and the dumb. Good Tuesday to you here on Sports Map Radio. All right, let's get right to it. The good of the day.
You know, for the good of the day, I'm a fan of reading stories where I find that stars are just like us.
Oh, yeah, I like those.
You know, you look at it and you're like, yep, that's exactly how I would be.
Reese Witherspoon gets her car washed at Sudsy's, too.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Well, this one deals with an NFL star, Josh Allen.
Oh, the Josh Allen
the
of Buffalo
Josh
or
Allen
the of, Josh Allen of the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Of Buffalo.
Got it.
Who became immediately starstruck upon meeting Tiger Woods.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
He even went as far as to say that, you know, he doesn't really get starstruck too often, but Tiger Woods is definitely one of those guys that makes his heart beat a little bit faster and leaves him speechless. And there is shows the encounter he had where he nervously kept putting his hand on Tiger's shoulder like, hey, great to meet you. Hey, I like you. Thanks, man. Just kept putting it, over and over again. It was a nervous tick he had.
It's kind of weird because I saw this in, I think you and I were talking about this with the Full Swing.
Yeah.
It's like all of these golfers were like, well, I grew up watching Tiger since I was three.
Right.
And I'm like, what a weird, that's really dating myself now because I've been in this business as long as Tiger Woods has been a pro golfer. And I'm like, golly, that's right. There's a whole generation now of professional athletes who all they know is Tiger Woods is the best golfer in the world. They don't know a time where he was an amateur. They don't know a time when he wasn't winning. They're like, I was born in 1995, and all I know is Tiger Woods was great.
I mean, it's to the point, I have a 15 and a 12-year-old. If I'm to ask them, name a golfer, that's who they would name.
That's right. Yeah, that's it. I always say, if you can transcend your name into just generic knowledge of people, whereas if I walk around and I say to someone, do you like football? And they go, I don't watch football. Do you know who Patrick Mahomes is? They might say yes, but they also might not. They might say no. But if I ask who Tom Brady is, they go, yeah, I know who that is.
Yep.
Like, I don't watch any football, but I know who that is. Tiger Woods is the same way, right? If I go, do you know who Jordan Spieth is? Again, no. You know who Tiger Woods is? Of course, right? Do you know who Patrick Cantlay is? No. Do you know who Tiger Woods is? Yeah. If you transcend greatness to just everybody knows you, just this sort of osmosis that just goes in everybody's head, you're that level. I have never seen Tiger Woods hit a golf ball in person. I've seen just about everybody perform something. Yep. I went to a Michael Jordan. I went to a Wizards game when I was in Denver just to see Michael Jordan play.
That doesn't count.
That doesn't count, I know. But what else can I do?
No, I get what you're saying. Right? Now, here's the question. Here's an interesting question. I didn't know the answer to this.
I mean, I rode an elevator with Shaquille O'Neal one time. That was funny.
You sure he wasn't the elevator himself?
Yeah, no, but
You were just riding on his shoe?
Okay, can I tell this story real quick? I want to tell this story real quick. I was in an elevator with Shaquille O'Neal at a time where, embarrassingly enough, I was a little really on the heavy side. I was really, really chunky. I look at pictures now of me and like my little boy, and I was like, oh, Tony, where'd you go? Right? But Shaquille and I got into an elevator together with a bunch of people, and Shaquille looked at me, and he looked at himself, and he smiled. And I don't know what that meant, but there was a sign that said weight limit 2,500 pounds.
Oh, he probably just looked at it and goes, I just made it.
I think Shaq was like, yeah, okay.
just made it.
We might have to kick some people out of here, young man. Shaq was having fun. He was going up to the suite. He wasn't playing for the Lakers that night, and I was going to the press box.
Well, see, that's why I was asking.
That's
my
Shaq story. But Tiger Woods, I'd probably be bumbling mess.
You would, right?
I mean, I probably would.
I guarantee this right now. I know for a fact you have 1,000 questions you'd want to ask him.
Absolutely.
And then when you get face-to-face, what would probably be your question? Oh, so you like golf?
Yeah, I know.
All of a sudden, you just become, you know, gibberish brain.
That's awesome. That's awesome that Josh Allen was starstruck, right? Because I know I would be. Yeah, I've never seen him. I would love to have seen him hit a golf ball. He stopped going to the International in Colorado when I was covering that event. He just stopped going. He went for a couple of years and was like, I'm done. I'm not coming. And well, I was like, so disappointed.
Probably heard from Shaq that there's this weird guy in Denver.
Yeah, right? He's just out, obsessed with asking you some questions if he could. But he won't get them out. That's awesome. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that Vince McMahon has put a price tag on the WWE.
Uh-oh, he's going to sell it?
I don't think he's going to sell it, but he said that he just has a price out there that he said if anyone wants to buy it, it's only going to cost you $9
billion. Wow, $9 billion. Is that about right?
I was trying to think about that.
Do the business executives feel like that's a legit number? That's a lot of money, but it's probably close. I don't know. That's a ton of money.
It's a lot of money, but at the same time, you know, I'll put it in
is
context
that worth
more
where than the like Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, didn't Elon Musk buy Twitter for $44 billion?
Yeah, I was gonna say. Okay, that's right. That's right.
I'm
looking
at it.
A worldwide company.
And this is people know about this around the world. I mean, I don't know.
Might be low now that you just said that.
The first thing that came into my mind was when Disney bought Star Wars. And you know,
$4 billion,
yeah. Which we know they have made back in, you know, probably made five times as much now on Star Wars merchandise and movies and blah, 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 blah.
So either shoving Baby Yoda down your throat.
Right. But
$9 billion. Now I'm thinking about it. And again, I'm not a business guy. I don't really know this world, but I got to think that's low. I think that would actually be
I thought
low.
That was kind of low, too.
You could own it forever. And you own all the property rights to it.
I mean, what's to stop someone, like, if he's saying $9 billion, what's to stop someone like Elon Musk going, all right, here you go.
Yeah.
I got that in cash. Here you go.
That might be, yeah. All right, so let me ask, I would ask this question. So he's not openly selling it.
No, he's not openly selling it.
Right?
Yeah, but he is old. I mean, he's getting to that point where.
Yeah, he's getting to that point.
You know, is the WWE going to be on a downswing soon?
Okay.
Yeah, you kind of had this ebb and flow with it. Throughout the years, and it's definitely, I don't think it's as big now as it was, say, 10, 15 years ago.
If you're going to do that, are you not inviting people to make a phone call to you?
Right.
Or are you just doing it to just say what it's worth? Because I got to think somebody is picking up the phone and going, Vince, I just saw this, and you know what? I'm very interested in talking to you about what this, let's talk.
Yeah.
Is that your starting point? Well, can we chat? And if he goes, no, I was just saying that. You know, I'm interested in selling it. Well, that's curious.
But I mean, if you throw a number out there and somebody comes back at you, if you're Vince McMahon, how do you not entertain the idea? Like,
yeah,
huh.
Look how I went from is $9 million too high to that actually might be low just in one simple little segment.
Yep.
This is why I'm a terrible business guy. You could probably sway me. Like, I must be terrible in car negotiations. This car is $30,000. oh, that seems like a really good, that seems really high. Then I'm like, well, I probably should pay you 45 for that. I'm terrible at this. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day is Marshawn Lynch finally revealed the reason for repeating, I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Okay, go ahead.
Phrase ahead of the Super Bowl, what was that, Super Bowl 49?
Yes.
He repeatedly said that because he had purposely not spoken to media prior to those games. And in the seasons before, he had totaled about $1.2 million in fines for not talking to the media.
What?
So that's why he sat up there and went, I'm just here so I won't get fined.
$1.2 million for not speaking to the media?
You know, over over the course of a couple of seasons, like, you know, that in Buffalo and then in Seattle. I look at it this way. We know he had real anxiety about speaking in front of media.
Yes.
Why push him? Because you need a soundbite?
$2 million out of his money?
Yeah, at what point do you go, all right, Marshawn, we get it.
What I'm saying. Like, at what point does the league go, there might be something larger than this, than the guy's refusal to talk to the media?
Yeah, he may not. He's not just giving us the cold shoulder because he's, you know.
Yeah, he's arrogant.
Right.
He might actually fear public speaking.
He doesn't like talking in public.
Right? I've met plenty of athletes like that. They get them a microphone. They get all nervous and a little worried because they know. If they go out, like if you talk to a player and they fumble a football, they're like, well, that's what I do, right? But if they say something wrong, they get bullied and backlash, and the fans come at them. They meant something they didn't, and oh, next thing you know, all hell's breaking loose.
It's a huge story. Yeah. Like, oh, you hear what he said about his quarterback?
That's right.
That's
exactly.
Like, that's not what I said. You took
that's
it
not
out
what
of
I
context.
Said. I love my guy. You took it out of right, and then all week you're hearing about how Joe Smith doesn't like his QB, yeah. And it's like, wait a minute, I love my quarterback. So I just made a point, and you know what? It's better if I don't say anything at all.
That's why we always say, I mean, you know, talking to a current athlete is harder now than it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're always afraid. Worried. You always get cookie-cutter answers because they're afraid of saying the wrong thing.
Yep. They don't want to deal with it.
They're not candid enough. But you get a former athlete, they'll be a candid all day.
Sure,
they want to make a name of themselves. But, yeah.
They want to get on ESPN.
$1.2 million in fines leading up to... No, I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Yep, that's $1.2 million. That's real money. Like, normally it's like 10 grand, right? Like,
yeah.
But when you've piled up $1.2 million just in that, that is real money. Shoot, man, that might bother me all day, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, coming up, if you're Houston, one of these other NBA teams, start tanking now.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, so how do you like Brian Windhorst, by the way, on ESPN? Do you like his reporting? I mean, he's there's Woj, there's him. Who else is an NBA guy to follow? Tim Legler.
Shams Charania.
Yeah. I mean, he's in that group, right?
Yeah,
so
I guess.
Yesterday I was perusing some NBA stuff. I was just kind of bouncing around. I stumbled upon the buzz around Victor Wembanyama, the French prodigy that everybody is vying for in the draft. And look, I've gone down this road with Yao Ming. I've gone this road with Nicholas Skidishvili when he was drafted by the Nuggets, and Luka Doncic, and all these kind of these foreign players that come in that we don't get to see on a regular basis, right? Like, we don't get to see... Like we can see a Brandon Miller at Alabama, or we can see, you know, Terrence Shannon or whoever we can, or Zach Edey at Purdue. Like, guys that are playing in college, and we can either see them play 1 year in college, or we can see them play 2 years in college or whatever, but we get a familiarity with them. And when it comes to foreign players, we don't get to see them on a daily basis. You kind of have to be a basketball junkie to really know those guys. And then we only see them when it's quote unquote too late, meaning like you're hoping that your team does due diligence on a potential foreign star, but you don't know when that player is drafted who exactly you're getting unless you're kind of a really deep basketball junkie. Nikola Jokic, same kind of thing, right? But Victor Wembanyama is a 7'5" basketball prodigy. So Brian Windhorst was on a podcast, and he was talking about this kid because he had gone over to France to do a story on him and to really get the lowdown on who the number one draft pick is going to be. And let me just say this. If I'm the Rockets, I don't win another basketball game for the rest of the season. If I'm the Spurs, I continue this 14-game losing skid they're on. I wouldn't win a game at all to get myself the best chance of getting this kid. This guy is a machine, an absolute machine. And it's working because, unlike other NBA stars, and this was one point that Windhorst pointed out in this podcast he was in, he said, you've got this French team that is entirely built around one objective. And the objective isn't to win the championship, although they're likely to do that. The objective is to put him in a position to better the skills he's going to need to be an NBA player. When have you ever heard any prospect come out of a program, even in college, where that was the objective? It's going to be fun to watch this kid develop in the NBA. And Winner said something rather interesting. Again, if you kind of respect him because he followed LeBron around his entire career, he said, outside of LeBron, there has not been a player this anticipated to be a megastar than this kid, Victor Wembanyama. And I started to realize, okay, here's a guy that lives and breathes basketball, who followed LeBron James, again, from high school. That's how he kind of made his mark in the world now, where he's a legitimate media star covering the NBA. And he protects, he almost protects LeBron's legacy in a way, right? When they want to talk about LeBron's place in history, like what outer stratosphere can we go with LeBron's legacy? They bring on Brian Winters because he gives it like, he really, really knows this guy, and he knows the challenges that he's faced. He's known the ups and downs of his public image. He's been there since day one. Remember, he was an Ohio guy covering an Ohio guy, and then when he went to Miami, he went to Miami with him. And he became the go-to person for everything LeBron James. So when he puts anybody in LeBron James's category, I pay attention. And like I said, listen, I knew about this kid, his size, but I've seen size come out and it not lead to a level of dominance that where we're talking about championship contending teams now because he's on it. And the big man in the NBA is kind of a passive thing now. But the reality of it is you can't teach size. And a guy that big, 7'5", that can get to the rim and block shots and has a jumper, all of a sudden now there is something about this NBA draft that's going to be really exciting. Again, a lot of people aren't basketball junkies, so they did not know, as I mentioned earlier, some of the stars overseas when they would come to be in the draft and your team was getting a guy from Serbia or your guy was getting a guy from Croatia or you're getting a guy from France or Spain or wherever, a lot of people had to do their homework because, again, you're barely following the NBA. You may be just following your team. You certainly aren't keeping up with box scores from Peru, right? But you're hoping your team is. Look, when I worked in minor league basketball, I tell you right now, 2 years of that in my life, in my career, while it was a struggle to get paid sometimes, the most educational 2 years I've had in terms of knowledge about a sport. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. But I used to help with a scouting report that our league did. So him and I kind of collaborated and he would do the scouting report and I would package it up. So we'd send it to NBA teams and we designed it really well. And it was really cool. But the reality was we had these two leagues and the two leagues were based on this idea, this sort of philosophy that these guys really want to play in the United States. So you'd get a kid, he'd play in college. Let's say he played at, I don't know, Wyoming or someplace like that. And he wasn't good enough to be in the NBA, but he had a lot of talent. Real talent. Like he could, if he had the right seasoning, he could get overseas and he could go play in Greece or he could go play in Brazil or he could go play in Australia, but No. He's better off playing at home where the teams could see him on a regular basis. That was the big pitch, right? Take less money to play in the United States where the NBA is going to keep an eye on you. But it was all baloney. It was all baloney because the guy I was doing that scouting report for, he had been in the NBA a long time, and he was just sort of on the kind of tail end. He was assistant coach. But he told me flat out, he goes, man, he goes, Tony, if a kid's hitting 10 three-pointers in Paraguay, we know who he is. He's like, there's no place on the globe you can hide. He's like, we have got our tentacles all around the globe. So there's no hidden gem somewhere. Right? He goes, we know all the players. We know who's who and we know where's where. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, that was kind of eye-opening for me at the time at 27 years old. I kind of bought into the whole idea. And this was when the internet was barely a thing. And they still knew. Because, again, you're talking about a network, a global network, to make sure. Because a lot of people have money invested in good talent. And when you have money invested in good talent, people make sure that the right people know that talent. Now it's different. You can with the internet and whatnot, you can post videos and get social buzz. You can get people excited about a player, et cetera. I think they did this with in that movie Hustle with Adam Sandler, where he went overseas to see a player that was getting a lot of attention, and he ended up finding somebody else. But this is going to be a battle draft to get this kid at number one. And you better make sure you've got all the ping pong balls that you possibly can.
I'm ready for the popcorn.
I can't wait to see who gets this number one pick. I have no idea what this means. I'm not promising championships to the Spurs or the Rockets if they land him. I think the Pistons are a lousy team too. I think they got a bad record. But whoever gets him is getting a at least the buzz around this person that he's an NBA game changer, a real game changer. But you know what? The Pelicans celebrated getting Zion Williamson, and all we've gotten from Zion Williamson is injuries and being out of the lineup. And when he's in the lineup, he's great. But I've done it. I read a few more articles about him last night, and he plays in a 2,800 seat arena, 2,800. And it's one of those sort of closed in gyms, right? But they're packed. There's lines outside the arena to try to get a piece of him. People will wait outside the arena who didn't have tickets to get into the arena just to see him come out. He's 19. He's a 19-year-old kid. When he was in Vegas for the G League, every game was highlight reel stuff. So I don't like tanking, and I think it's hard to get players to tank. But when you're coaching staff, you don't have to do much in the NBA to purposely lose games. I think the message should be out there that, chill a little. Like, LeBron James is dying to get the Lakers into the playoffs, right? They're in the third to last place in the Western Conference. They're dying to get the team in the playoffs. But the Spurs and Rockets are absolutely terrible. Detroit is absolutely going nowhere. Charlotte's going nowhere. Orlando's going nowhere. The teams that are going to be in position, I don't know. There's a couple of guys that might have lottery picks based on trades from the past. But Victor Wambanyama is a guy you really want to get. Really, really want to get. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you could join us.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. Dan Wolkin, USA Today, has got a really good article, column. And Dan and I, he's been kind of contentious at times with us, hasn't he, when we had him on before a couple times?
A little bit here and there, yeah.
He likes to go on radio shows, though. He'll defend his arguments. Sometimes I don't agree with his arguments. Sometimes he makes some ones where I go, I don't know, that's kind of a reach just to make a column. But he was talking about the NCAA just went to court again with this whole idea of amateurism. And so it's a case where we know about the Ed O'Bannon situation, right? Kind of allowed a door open for name, image, and likeness as it went to the Supreme Court. And now players can make money on name, image, and likeness.
And it got rid of NCAA football.
Right, exactly.
Video games.
Exactly.
That's the one area you can hate
that's
it for.
That's the takeaway. That's the takeaway from that. But as we've been saying before about name, image, and likeness, it takes the schools off the hook, right? So you're not paying, if you're a school administrator, you're not paying the athletes. The athletes don't get paid. The athletes get paid name, image, and likeness if there's a name, image, and likeness opportunity. If you're the backup long snapper and no one's asking you if you want to do an endorsement deal, you don't make any money. But if you're the star quarterback and you can make $2 million, $3 million endorsement deals, right? It's just a free market, right? So if you're the soccer player that no one's paying attention to, that you're out of luck. So the latest lawsuit comes on the idea of, wait. Athletes should be paid by the universities if the universities are making money off of them. And that includes everybody, right? That includes the golfer, the track and field player, the soccer player, the field hockey player. It doesn't matter. That if you're doing something in a revenue-based environment, that you should get paid. And while nobody has the official transcript of this, there were reporters that were there who covered it who said that the NCAA looked bad in the courtrooms. And not surprising, because they are trying to argue an antiquated argument that now people are finding holes in, and not only poking holes in, but sort of had a wake-up call to the realization that this probably wasn't the right thing to do for decades and decades and decades. So in the argument had always been, and you all know this, the argument had always been that if a school is giving you free room and board, paying for books, paying for the education, paying for the school, right, that they now, you now work for them. You're working for that. So if you're a quarterback, that means you got to go to practice, and you got to go to meetings, and you got to go to film sessions, and you got to go to workouts, and you got to get up at 5 in the morning to go to whatever it is that it is. You have to do all of these things because we're paying room and board. And if we make millions of dollars off of you and your teammates, that's the way it goes. Even if you don't make millions of dollars, let's say you're on the golf team and we're paying room and board and giving you a scholarship, you are to go to practice. You are going to the range. You are going to get putting for an hour. You're going to go get coaching here and whatever it is. Track and field, soccer, field hockey, ice hockey, doesn't matter. However, the arguments are getting worse and worse for the NCAA hanging on to the idea of amateurism. It really is. It's really changing. It's changing. It's morphing into something. And I've said this many times. There are two things that I think that the next generation is going to look back at us and even further down the line than us and wonder what all the fuss was about. There are two things in sports. One, that people were actually suspended for marijuana use. And three, gambling, marijuana use, and NCAA amateurism. I think the generation that is young now, it's probably, because it's, if you're in your 20s, it's probably still a major issue, and there's still states that haven't legalized marijuana and haven't legalized gambling. But I think the generation that's coming will look back in their 20s and 30s and say, man, my God, what was my grandfather thinking? What was my great-grandfather thinking? Because it's going to be a whole new world. Right. You've seen gambling, for example, exponentially explode. We've seen a point where teams used to suspend players good amount of games if they had gotten caught smoking marijuana. Now that's off the table in a lot of collective bargaining agreements. And now you're going to start seeing this with amateurism in sports. Right. Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court had made a point that nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. And under ordinary principles of antitrust law, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. That's a key statement, because what he's pointing out is, in order for the colleges not to pay the players, the reason that they're not doing it is because they're defining their players and their student athletes as incapable of making money, because the definition of amateurism is that you don't make money. And so they've been grabbing that term, slapping on their student athletes and saying, we'd love to, but we can't because they're amateur athletes. And under the rule of amateurism, we're not allowed to pay them. And this one Supreme Court justice is pointing out that's not acceptable. You can't do that. You can't say that you can't get paid because the definition of your employment or your or what you do is that you can't get paid. You have to get paid something. But the schools have always argued that room, board, and tuition is a sense of payment. We all did internships, right? I mean, if you've done an internship in any field, you either got a paid internship or you got a non-paid internship, but you got something out of the deal, and that was credit, right? I remember I was an intern at a television station in Boston. I went twice a week, and that was the agreement. So I agreed to be an intern where I would log film, and I'd cut highlights, and I would write scripts, and I really learned the TV business. And I was there twice a week, and that was my agreement, and I got credit for that on route to my journalism degree. That was the payment that I received. Now, I can remember one time offering to come in for another intern that was sick. And they said, no, they said, unfortunately, you can't. And I just was trying to be a good guy, right? I was like, oh, I can come, you know, Thursday to fill in if you wanted. They said, no, I can't. Your agreement is that you only come Wednesday and Saturday. Any other time, that's outside of the agreement. You can't do it. I'm sure many of you had internships that were similar in that way. Maybe some of you didn't have internships that were similar in that way, but mine was. Mine was locked into that. And I didn't care that I was getting credit and I was learning the TV business. But in this case, I think that this is going to change a lot here because it was always the disguise of, yeah, okay, Bryce Young should be getting a check, right? But should the women's soccer goalie get a check? Should the male track and field runner get a check? Should the cheerleaders get a check? Right? Should, I mean, like there was all the, like how far down do you go? For if you are utilized in some capacity by the school in a profit event, where does it go? So we can all look at the starting quarterback and the star players and say, yes. All right, how about the backups? Well, they're on the team, sure. Well, how about the cheerleaders? They have to go and practice, and they have to be at those events. Oh, okay. No, I don't know, but maybe. How about the band? The band goes. Really? The band? They got to practice, too, and they're assigned these games that they have to go to, I guess. Like, how far down does it go? Right? That's when. How about the student managers? Like, do they get paid? That's the tricky part about all this, right? Like, that's the tricky part. I've always said, like, listen, I'm all for student athletes. I think NIL, as much as it's nuts, as much as I lose my mind sometimes with all the who's getting what and what's happening and recruits saying.
Just trying to figure it out.
Just trying to figure it out. I would never take it away. I'm not against it. I know old timers are, man. I know old timers are. I'm telling you. Remember what I said earlier? About old timers telling me all the time, I think it's wrong that they leave school early for the NBA. You don't care.
Nope.
Stop pretending you do. They need to stay and get their education. No, they don't. They need to stay so you can enjoy them playing a few more years.
You know that
that's all you care about.
There's that other argument that's gone away too. There's scholarship, that's payment.
That's right, yeah.
They're
that's
getting
done.
Free tuition.
Yeah.
And books and boarding.
That's down the tubes. That's gone.
You don't hear anyone say it.
Anybody, right? Exactly. Oh, these kids being able to transfer wherever they want to go. Whatever happened to commit? No, again, your principle is different. Your principle is, I just like state you. I want them to be good. That's all you care about. Really? Like, if you cared about their grades, you'd be hiring them tutors.
Yep.
You don't care about their grades. I used to love hearing that from old timers. They need to get their education. Why? That's their business. That's something you don't need to be in their business when it comes to that. Just admit you hate seeing the all-American point guard that got your team to the Elite Eight leaving for the NBA. And now you don't have him on your team. Those old-time arguments, going back to this, those old-time arguments, they're going to be treated as silly, and very soon as silly as that.